Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Joule, the immersion circulator for sous vide by Chef Steps. Order now at chefsteps.com/joule.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Cooking Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday from, like, well, this time, like, 12:15 to, like, yeah, like, 1 o'clock on the Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's Pizzeria. Where, Peter?
Brooklyn.
Where in Brooklyn, dude?
Oh, at Roberta's.
Dude, what's the neighborhood in Brooklyn where we are?
Bushwick.
Dang. Well, as you can tell, joined by an ever peppy Peter Kim, Grand Vizier of the Museum of Food and Drink. Got Dave in the booth. How you doing?
What up? Doing good.
All right, good. And we have Nastasia of the Hammer Lopez next to me. How you doing?
Good.
So call in your questions, museum-related perhaps or not, to 718-497-2128. That's 718-497-2128. So yesterday was the first day in the closing week festivities of Booker and Dax, the bar. And, man, I think people had a good time, but, man, was it a poop show. We, like, 86'd everything, like, right away. Like, they took the chairs out, so, like, the bar was three deep. It turns out that I don't know how to operate the POS system. Like, all these drinks just, God. Like, it was just, like, I think it was good, though. People had a good time. We had to 86 a bunch of stuff. Last night we had D came back. Our manager D. Canonis came back as a guest bartender. We had Ann Robinson came back. Jesse Vita came back. Austin Henley came back and told me an interesting story about – you will enjoy this, Nastasia – about Damon Bolte.
What about him?
So I knew it, but I didn't think about it. Souther Teague, who's coming tonight, by the way. So if you come tonight, we have, like, Nick Bennett, Souther Teague coming tonight to Booker and Dax. Who else? Dana Corey. I forget who I'm not mentioning a couple of people. I got to look at the – Nastasia will look at the list maybe if she feels like it.
She doesn't.
She doesn't. And tomorrow we have David Wondrich and Leo Robichek and Don Lee coming to the bar, so look out for that. But anyway, so Austin says, so I was doing Damon's show at Roberta's with Souther, because Souther are co-hosts, right? Yeah, so he's doing the show, and, you know, Damon Bolte's identical twin, which you talk about a lot, and Stassi, you like that fact. Whenever you mention Damon Bolte, you mention the identical twinness. And there are too many freaking food and drink identical twins in the New York City area. There's just too many of them. It's crazy, right? I mean, like, in other words, I have not met an identical twin that doesn't have one of the twins working in the food business. Someone needs to do a study on this. Have you met any identical twins, Peter, that are not in the food business?
No.
Is it because we only know people in the food business? You know lawyer people. Nastasia, you know, like, weirdos, weird non-food people, right? Do you know any identical twins in that scenario?
No.
I know one. Now think about it. I know one. Medicine and architecture. Not food. Anyway, so Damon Bolte's twin comes in, and apparently everyone in Roberta's is like, hey, what's up? He totally ignores him, pulls in Nastasia, like, sour face and blasts right past him. And then when Damon walks in, everyone's like, Damon, why are you such a jerk, man? He's like, that was my twin. That was a good story, right? Good times. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so also turns out, going back to Booker and Dax, that the jerks that live above Booker and Dax, like, haven't lived there as long as the bar has existed, and start complaining at, like, 11 and smashing things into the floor to tell us to be quiet. Now, I don't know about you, but you don't turn blow the whistle down. You know what I mean? If you're playing Blow the Whistle or any one of those other songs and you're mixing drinks and your bar is three deep, the correct response is not turn the music down. The correct response is don't move to New York and live above a bar, moron! You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Idiot.
Yeah.
Who does that? Like, that's what I hate about New Yorkers. Like, not New York, real New, like, you just wouldn't move if you... You are not entitled to change the people who already exist around you. You know what I mean? You move into a place. The place is bad because there is – it's not like all of a sudden – okay, look, I've done this a bunch of times, right? I'll move into a place and the person who lived in my apartment before me was like an 85-year-old woman who lived alone and never had any visitors because her kids never came to visit her anymore. She made zero noise her entire life, like, you know, I don't know, didn't watch TV, no cable, nothing, no noise, nothing. She dies, we move in with, like, the kids and me and, right. You know, the dinner parties, the family dinner and all this stuff, and everyone gets mad. And you know what? I kind of understand that, except for you live in New York. Like, you're not entitled to your kind of super quiet, privacy, nice life. That's why it's New York. Nastassi, what do you think about this?
I think, yeah.
I mean, like, there's bounds of rationality, but, like, living directly above a bar.
Yeah.
That you moved into.
Did they move in after you were there?
Yes.
All right, well then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Living in the city. Trade-offs.
Well, it's not a trade. It's like, just, like, you know, understand what you're dealing with when you move in. You know what I mean? Like, some people shouldn't live in the city. Like, apparently, these frat weasels who moved into this, like, I think there's, like, 30 of them living in this apartment up, going all against frat people. But you know what I'm saying? There's 30 of them living in this place above us. And then, I don't know, whatever. Just suck it up. You know what? Whatever. So, anyway, Peter, you're on here to push the Museum of Food and Drink?
It only needs 10,000 more.
The only reason
10,
why I ever come on
more.
Your show. What's that? Yeah.
Only 10,000
more. But we need it in one day.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So we need two Cooking Issues listeners to donate 5,000 each.
Yeah. And even beyond that, it's the last chance to get tickets to see the exhibition before it opens to the public. And so it's going on until 8 p.m. tomorrow. And we need to cross the finish line of $80,000 by tomorrow. I'm super psyched about the exhibition. We're going to have, I mean, just to recap, we're going to have the Fortune Cookie Machine. We're going to have tastings. We'll be demonstrating some different techniques in Chinese American cuisine. We'll have some awesome menus, giant wall of takeout boxes. So yeah, it's going to be like just, you know, awesome show. And so get your tickets on chow.mofed.org.
And we're going to chain Peter to something. You can just pillory him. Like, that's going to be one of the things. Maybe we'll set up a dunk tank with Peter in it. Wouldn't that be awesome? Oh my God, Peter, you should totally do that. Like a Peter Kim dunk tank.
Yeah.
You think we can
How
make
is that Chinese?
I don't know. It has nothing to do with that. It's like part of the little side exhibition.
If somebody puts in $10,000, I will set up a dunk tank.
You heard it.
Will
here,
you
folks.
Get in it, Dave?
Hell no.
I will set up a.
I'll get in
bleeping,
a dunk tank. Sure, I'll get
a
in
bleeping
it.
Dunk tank. Yeah, I'll do that.
Family show.
I said bleeping.
All right. Pretty soon, actually, we have the non-family show from Johnny Walker coming up. We've got to talk about this. By the way, Nastassi, you'll enjoy this. The name, this Latin name for you know, the beans, with beans. You familiar with it? You're going to enjoy it. Phaseolus vulgaris. You like that? All right. Let me get to some questions, if I was smart enough to pull them up. Okay. This is from Shy. It is well known that old beans take longer to cook than young beans. Why is that? Well, I thought I knew the answer to this question, and it turns out that I don't know the answer to this question. You know, you think it's just kind of a moisture thing, but that doesn't really explain. That doesn't really, I don't think, explain what's going on. And then I did an initial search on the internets. And, like, every manufacturer and, like, council that tries to sell dried beans will tell you if you store the beans too long, they say, in quotes, they will never soften. Now, I know that's garbage because you can pressure the heck out of them and soften them. You could add baking soda and soften them. But then I realized I didn't understand. It's not simply that it's drying out. Something else is happening. So I have to the short answer is I have to go. I have to go look it up, and I'll have to go do some sort of a scientific search on the order of you know, dry bean storage changes. Like, it's always like people who have the money for these sorts of studies are always kind of big industrial concerns. And so you always add things like storage, shelf life, dried beans. You try to hit it as – you try to phrase your searches. This is – by the way, anyone who actually wants to find their own info, right? I found out from Ariel Johnson, who was here a couple weeks ago, that there is a website, and I'm sure, you know, all of you guys, all you cool kids out there already know about it. But it's and I don't know, like, how legal slash illegal it is, but I'm going to give you guys this website in case you don't already have it. It's Sci, like science, sci-hub.cc. Okay, that's sci-hub.cc. And this website allows you to download almost any scientific paper that is behind a normal, like, university firewall. Now, it's not as easy to use as university thing, because you need a record called the DOI. Now, what a DOI, I don't actually know what it stands for, but it's a long, long identifier that uniquely identifies a particular article. Okay, so how do you get that? So many, many, many of the either the university search engines or even the actual database owners like Wiley or Elsevier or these guys will allow you to search and get the abstracts. And oftentimes you can get this identifier in the abstract, cut and paste it into the Sci-Hub page, and boom, the paper pops up. Now, the legality, I haven't looked it up. I don't know. What do you think, Peter? If I don't know, is it okay? Can I go like Talmudic on this? If I have no idea whether it's illegal or not, it's okay to use it? You're the lawyer.
I think you get one free pass. That's my official legal opinion.
Do I get a lifetime free pass on using this one thing? Like, in other words, like, I don't know if this is illegal, I'm not going to look it up. Anyway, it's a fantastic way to go get it. So when you are searching for things, in general, the way to find information is to think about your problem and try to cast it in the most industrial light possible. So any sort of thing that you think that Campbell's Soup might care about, or anything that you think that Nabisco might care about, because these are the people that have money to pay for these kinds of studies. And that's in general how I find it. So this week is extremely tough for me because the bar closing stuff, but I'm going to try to look up more on that, because it leads me to another thing. When I realized that I had no idea what was going on with the dried beans, it also led me to thinking about, you know, the time that Booker & Dax has been open, and every time I've been cooking, is a concept of drift. And so, and I've been thinking a lot about it recently. So you get drift in your whole life. And what does that mean? So you have, like, you come up with a recipe, you come up with a technique, you implement it, you teach it, then that goes on autopilot. And just like a game of telephone when you were a kid, you know, eventually there is drift in that technique and there's drift in the end product. And so when you're running a restaurant or when you're running a bar, you have to set things in place to prevent your products, your techniques, your recipes from drifting too far from where you started. Often, I mean, sometimes drift is good. Sometimes you start with something and the drift actually makes it better. Most of the time, that's not the case. And even if it did make it better, you want to know why and then codify that. So I think, you know, a lot of what I've been thinking about is that kind of drift and control. And that's, I think a couple of weeks ago we talked about the Eric Repair story in Nastasia, mm-hmm. where, you know, he has a very specific thing that will never drift, Kraft Swiss cheese. And so they use that Kraft Swiss cheese because that's palate drift. That's about your drift of palates over time and change, right? And so kind of locking into one idea to increase consistency. But the same is true. Same drift happens in your own mind. So most of the time, like, I know this is, you know, applies to me especially, or anyone that, you know, works on a problem for a small amount of time and then compartmentalizes that and then puts it away, right? And then you tend to think, oh, I solved that problem. And Nastasia, you know this better than anyone. You've heard me say the same dang explanations like a billion times in demo to demo to demo.
Yep.
The problem is that most of the time, like your actual, you haven't done enough actual work at that beginning section to actually get the real answer, right? And you only marginally understand what you're talking about when you're actually doing all the hardcore work. So then like 2, 3, 4 years later, right, all you have left in your head are the results. And you don't remember any of the caveats to the research that had you come up with those results, typically. So you'll think you have an idea locked down. And in fact, over the years, if you don't revisit it and look back into it again, you, turns out you know almost nothing at this point. And so, you know, trying to, one of the reasons this show is helpful for me personally to do it is that people ask me questions that make me re-examine. And Harold McGee is awesome at this stuff, constantly re-examining things that you hold dear or hold as just kind of truths and re-examining them down to a base level to try to re-understand what you're doing. And because almost always, you know, you were wrong about something. You were wrong about some of your premises or something like that. So the bean thing got me thinking on that because it was something that, you know, I thought about a long time ago. Oh, yeah, they dry out as they get older. They get harder to cook. Clearly there's more going on, and I need to go freaking research that thing. And in fact, almost all the questions this week are of that variety, things that I thought I knew something about, and then I looked into it only marginally, feeling that I could just come back with a quick snappy doodle answer, and it turns out it's a much more complicated problem.
I mean, if you leave a dried bean out, like what humidity level does it get to at the end of the – eventually?
Well, that's the thing, right? Let's say you live in – and this is something I don't know. Let's say you live in New Orleans, which is, you know – I don't know, not a swamp, that's no. Overstating it, but it's humid, right? So is it going to equilibrate to, in other words, even in a sealed environment where you're not losing a lot of moisture, right? I think the beans, they change over time. I think there's a structural thing going on, right? So increased moisture absorption, if it's just moisture, this could be overcome relatively quickly with a longer cooking time. Or perhaps, let's say, you know, you're a believer in this current no-soak thing, a soak to increase or to retemper back up. But there's no indication on the dry bean. If that was the case, the dry bean council people would say, if you have some old beans, put like a moistened paper towel in with the old beans for like a couple of weeks, and then they'll be good as new again.
Because that's how the bean council talks.
Have you met the bean council? but that is, in fact, not what they say. I mean, now look, the other thing you have to be very careful of is downloading the new iOS on your phone, because it no longer freaking works. I'm trying to reopen the question. What you have to be careful of is that the bean council has a vested interest in you throwing away your old beans and buying new ones. In reality, though, what they should do is tell you how to fix your old beans, because if you fix your old beans and have success, you'd be like, you know what? I actually enjoy cooking dry beans. I will purchase more dry beans. You know what I mean? Where instead, you're like, they tell me I should throw it away. I'm going to get this package of beans. I'm never going to cook it. Then it's going to get too hard. I'm not going to know whether or not it's still good. I'm not going to sit around and try to cook these dried beans. And then they don't soften. And then what? Dinner's ruined? No. And then they throw it away and they never buy dried beans again. Right. See? That's my feeling. Mm-hmm. My feeling is that if something appears like it's in your best interest, get people to throw away and buy fresh beans, sometimes it's not in your best interest. The best interest
maybe
is,
there's an advantage to it.
To what? The old beans?
Yeah, you never know.
Well, it's like often. Like we have a question coming up soon on staling. And that, you know, so that's true. I love staled bread for other things. We'll get to that in a minute. About the new iOS. Have you downloaded it, Nastasia?
I'm not allowed to.
Please don't. Like, I can't. I was at a wedding on Sunday, and I'm like, oh, and my phone has been pestering me for weeks. Oh, update. Why don't you update? You're going to sleep now. I could tell. Can I update now? And you're like, fine. Jeez. You hit it. It updates. And then it no longer operates like a This is why I thought that when Steve Jobs died that I would be free of this sort of like tyranny of
updates.
Enforced changes to the way that I use my device.
The worst is unless you do something, it's going to update in 30 seconds.
Yeah, right. Like, so the ghost of Steve Jobs came back and caused me to not get pictures of my friend's wedding because I had gotten used to the fact that I could go shaboom and like take my phone and it turns into a camera instantly. I did that. And then it like sprays a bunch of garbage on the top of my screen. It's like, press a button to continue. And then I pressed a button, but I pressed it too long. And Siri's like, may I help you? I was like, well, can you take the picture of the bride that I wanted freaking 10 seconds ago and not have it look like I'm texting during the middle of a wedding ceremony by typing on my phone like a lunatic? She was like, I don't understand you, Dave. You know what I mean? Jerks. Anyway, so
I heard about that, man. You What a jerk, man! Texting in the middle of the.
I know it. What kind of a jerk shows up? It was a small. Like, it's a small wedding too. It's like you don't want. It's not
can
like
wait, man.
It's,
can wait.
It's not
it's
like
an important moment.
Yeah, it's not like the Lady Di wedding where I'm one of like 8 billion people and no one's like, you know, who's that idiot texting, and then they draw a bead on me like the snipers draw a bead on me or something like this. You know what I mean? It's.
The best thing is it wasn't just like it looked like you were texting somebody, but having a really angry text discussion with somebody.
Oh, yeah, because you know what my face was looking like.
I know exactly.
Everyone else is like has this, like, you know, joy and like, and then
you're
I have this, like,
stabbing at your phone.
Yeah, I've got like, I'm trying to use my eyes to drill holes through my telephone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nightmare. Okay, Shai's second question. Additionally, how and why?
What?
Why does the starch degelatinization, I assume you mean recrystallization, in stale bread cause it to have a chewy texture? And is this similar to moisture loss from warm bread exposed to the air? Warm. Which can also lead to such texture. Many thanks, Shai. No. Staling is not moisture loss. And again, bread staling is a very – I'm going to do the Trump sniff from now on. Yeah, staling of bread is not primarily a...
Dave, you're going to jail.
Well, yes, but yes. Anyway, the staling is not... I'm sorry, like, it's not a political show, but that debate was impossible to watch. If you were on either side of the fence, that debate was, like, so cringeworthy, right? I mean, weren't you just like, the whole time I was like, oh, this is my country, right?
Yeah.
Did you watch it, Peter?
Yeah.
What were you like? Again, like, not like, don't talk about your political side, anything. But how do you feel?
No, the whole thing is just painful. I mean, ideally, what you want is just actual debate on the merits of things that matter.
Yeah, no, we're beyond that. We're beyond that. I think, but the thing is, I hate this in between thing. That's like watching, like, you know, it's like watching, you know, Meet the Parents. It's just uncomfortable. You know what I mean? You know, some of the moments are funny, but it's an uncomfortable funny that makes me want to put my head in a paper bag. You know what I mean? It's like, we just need to have like a Jell-O match between these two.
It's a joke. I mean, it's the kind of thing that people in other countries could point to and say, like, yeah, I mean, it's just a total circus.
Yeah, yeah. And it's the kind of thing that, like, Jon Stewart used to, like, make fun of other countries. And, like, look at the parliament of blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? And, like, look at the fist fight at the parliament. Aren't these people funny? Ha, ha, ha. Well, now it's us.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It's like, wow. Anyway, so bread staling is not primarily a moisture loss, but – and I remember – so I went to my – you know, my wife is very anxious for me to finish, and Nastasia is very anxious for me to finish the second book that I'm supposed to be working on. So I was like, how about this? The importance of moisture management. And Jen's like, are you an idiot? Or what kind of a moron? No one's going to buy a book on moisture management. And I was like, but Nastasia, I mean, Nastasia, because you also had the look, so I was thinking of you now, because Nastasia's giving me the moisture management look, which is very close to the vegan face.
Giving Peter the moisture management.
Oh, moisture. Anyway, so I was like, you know, I was telling my wife, I was like, look at, and telling you guys on the air, like, such a huge percentage of cooking problems in the world are moisture management problems. So everyone's like,
that's true.
Why is the crust of the meat, why is the skin bad? Because you don't know how to handle moisture management. Like, what's wrong with the bread? You have no understanding of moisture management. Oh. What's wrong with my pizza? Moisture management.
I want to capture that look on her face.
If I told my editor, at the publisher at Norton, if I was like, hey, Maria, check this out for a book. How about this? The miracle of moisture management. No. But it's all about that. So, like, people, like, they think that they can put, like, an instantaneous crust on the outside of something and then it's going to be good. No. You haven't removed enough moisture from the crust area to get it right. Like, what's wrong with my fried foods? Well, you haven't managed the balance between moist and non-moist. Same with potato chips, French fries. Like, almost anything that isn't a braise. And even braises have moisture management problems. Cooking beans, cooking starches. Mm-hmm. Like, why bread's stale in the first place, whether they'll go stale quickly, is moisture management in the dough, right? And then how it stales itself is also a matter of moisture management as it goes out. So the miracle of moisture management, it turns out that no one thinks that will sell. That sells even less than cocktail books, which, you know, don't sell that well. But you know what I mean? It's like
– then you're – your history of writing books will be liquid intelligence and then moisture management. Yeah.
The miracle. Nice. The miracle of moisture management.
Yeah.
That's going to be on like the $10 shelf.
$10 shelf. Do you remember when Borders used to exist and they had the like the $3?
Yeah.
But it was a giant $3 book about like World War II airplanes.
You could also get all sentimental, you know, thinking about like why my face is so tear stricken after our work meetings.
It's the miracle of moisture management. It's managing your moisture.
Exactly that.
I am, by the way, people, in meetings, I am the worst. I am the worst. I am the most inflexible weasel. In a meeting, like the thing is that we had these meetings at the Museum of Food and Drink where we're talking about the exhibition, and
let's air it out.
And so Peter,
here comes the moisture.
We're all sitting around this table, right? We're sitting around this table, and we're trying to figure out how to do the best exhibition given the parameters that we have to work with. And when Peter comes to tell me something that he knows I'm going to disagree with, right? I can tell because here's what Peter does. He walks up, sits down, and goes, and like deflates like half of his size. Stares down at his like 50,000-year-old MacBook with half the keys missing, and is like, you know, I can just see it. I can just see the shoulders go down a little bit, and I'm like, Peter, man, I'm not so bad. And then he says something, and in fact, I am.
Yeah.
In fact, I am. You know what I mean? It's like. And I'm not evil. I'm just not, you know.
Oh, there goes the major management again. Getting overclamped.
Anyways, but like the
yeah.
Moisture management.
Yeah.
So, it works with your colleagues. It works with your bread. So
shattering dreams or shattering crust.
Yeah, I mean, same.
One or the other.
Lomismo. So the deal is, what do you think, Dave? Do you think moisture management could be a book? No, right? No.
Yeah, I don't know.
No. What about the miracle of moisture management?
I mean, it does sound miraculous, but you know, it's a tough sell.
It's got three M's in a row. What could be bad about three M's in a row?
Yeah, everybody loves alliteration.
Yeah, except for people. If you open something with the word country, do not spell it with a K, especially if there's a kitchen. You're two-thirds of the way there. No good. Anyway,
got a caller on the line if you want to take that next.
Yeah, sure. Let's do that. Caller. We'll talk about bread after we do the caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Dave. This is Jeffrey in Costa Mesa, California.
How you doing?
How's it going?
All right.
I'm one of the self-hating Californians.
Sweet.
So life is good.
Nastasia got some blowback on my Twitter account, by the way, about the who is it? Someone said, at Leapers was like, California hates you too, Nastasia. Strong. Give me a pound on
not
that.
True.
Not true. Oh, nice. All right. Go ahead. What do you got for me? Wait, Costa Mesa, is that where they grow the beans? Is that where Rancho Gordo,
Rancho Gordo, are you talking about?
Are they there? Is that where they are? Are you in bean
Sorry,
land?
Didn't catch the question.
Oh, wait, like you said Costa Mesa, right? Is that where Rancho Gordo is? Is that where the beans are grown? Where is Costa Mesa?
We're like south of Long Beach, just south of Los Angeles on the coast.
Maybe. I don't know. All right, go ahead.
I don't believe we grow beans, but...
No? Yeah, well, you probably grow
oranges something. Back in the day, but those are gone now.
Really? Why? Because of the citrus greening or just because of economics? Or
there's
water?
Too many people.
Too many... Oh. Turns out people are worth more than oranges?
No, we're not. That's what some financial people seem to think.
Yeah.
Even in a drought, it's just pleasant here. It's kind of disgusting.
Nice.
So I'm going to be installing. Yeah. I'm going to be installing some foot pedal valves.
Nice, good move.
And the TNS brass ones. And my guys are kind of scratching their head on how to solve the problem. I know you'd mentioned before there's a trick in basically allowing the hand cartridge valve to still work at the faucet. So they're trying to figure out how to have the foot pedal valve still work when the cartridge valve on the handle is in the closed position, how to sort of bypass that.
All right, so
like a T assembly that we need, but I'm wondering if you can give me some specifics.
So I've done this two ways, and I actually think the way that I did it the first time was better, and I'll tell you both ways. So the way I originally did it and the way that I actually recommend is I physically separate out the – I separate the foot pedals from the hand cartridge, and I have them mix in the gooseneck. And so what you do there is you get like the base faucet, right, which is either going to be wall or deck mounted, and then you actually you don't use the weird swivel fitting there. You just literally you get all chrome. A chrome T-fitting, and then chrome nipples. You get to choose the size, and then you screw them together. It's easiest if you're doing wall mount as opposed to deck, right? Because in a wall mount, your sink, the flanges on the sink go back to the wall, and then the T can go back to the wall. You have to, and then right. You buy another flange, and you just work out the size of the chrome nipple, and what you end up with is a triangular flange, right? So you have, instead of two flanges going to the wall, you have three that go back. Then on the inside, once you mount it up, you screw the connector in, and then you just go direct on a regular brass fitting. You go a T into that third T that goes into your gooseneck, and then that goes down with check valves to your foot pedals, and now your foot pedals operate completely independently of your foot cartridge. It doesn't matter what's going on. That worked fantastically. On my new one, actually, the foot pedals still work fantastically on this one. On my new one, what I did was I bought a TNS unit that came with a sprayer arm, right? Now, what I did there is the problem is most sprayer arms, right, what they do is they sense the pressure. And so if you push the spray arm and let water through there, like a flap valve comes down and shuts off the water to the regular faucet head. And I don't know if that would work with this. The one that I bought, the way it works is both the sink head and the sprayer arm can work at the same time, and you have to push and rotate a valve to actually turn off the gooseneck. I hate this system. I hate it because it, pushing and turning is such a hassle. If it was one of those quarter turn cartridges, like, that would be good. So what I'm looking to do now, you know, now it's a couple years later, is rip off the gooseneck that I have and just screw another gooseneck on there and try to find an actual something that will shut the flow off to the gooseneck that's just a quarter of a turn and not some sort of push and twist like a childproof cap, which I freaking hate. But the right. But the way that one works is very easy on the hookup for the foot pedals, because what you do, and that one is deck mounted. So what you do is you just put your deck mount down, and that TNS one is designed to have a feed in from the bottom that is the spray arm. So where the spray arm goes in, I think you might have to get an adapter, I forget, but you just screw the T right there, and feeding into that T, right, is the mix from your foot pedals and also the spray arm. So it's super easy. Okay. It's super easy there because you have that central connector going in. But if you're going to use the spray arm, which I love the spray arm, you need to think of some better way to switch off the top of the gooseneck. The problem with
could you see a way that the first option could work in a deck mounted situation?
It's possible. I didn't research it because I knew I was moving. I thought I had solved it with the deck mount sink that I bought. But the problem with TNS Brass is that, I love their stuff, and like, it lasts a long time and you can get all the parts for it. But it's not something in general that you can just walk into a plumbing house and get. It's better now. It's easier. Like on Amazon, I think, carries some TNS stuff, and ktom.com.
Yeah, Webstaurant store has some of their.
Yeah, and KTOM. The nice thing about KTOM, at least it used to be, is I think they're out of Florida, is that it used to be a pain in the butt because KTOM had the best prices. And so I would call up TNS Brass and I would say, hey, and I would spend like, you know, 45 minutes on the phone with them asking about exactly which adapter am I going to use, blah, 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 blah. And then I couldn't just order it from them because they don't deal that way. And then I would call KTOM and be like, KTOM, put in an order for this. And then they'd ship it out like a week later. I don't know. I have to look at it and see whether there's some easy way. Well, there are easy ways. In other words, like you could, they make just a flange. You can buy the flange and then you can put the T in. The problem is getting it to space nicely, because if you're going to go deck and you want to drop that T down, it's going to have to go T and then over. So unless you want it to look completely whacked out nutty, right, you're going to have a relatively deep deck, because it's going to have to go out the back of your faucet and down. So now, instead of mounting just a regular, I don't know, they're probably like 2-inch flange or something like that. You need like a 2.5 to 3-inch deck to mount it on. Like, now you're going to need that deck plus however, like whatever the closest you can space that T over, which is going to be at least an inch. So you're adding like at least an inch, probably closer to an inch and a half, you know, to the depth of your deck on the deck mount situation.
Right.
And if you're willing to do that, it's like super easy. The one thing I don't know is I don't know. And once you do that, by the way, it's super easy to install the sprayer arm on it, because now once you have a third thing going down below the deck, that happens like after the cartridge mixing, then you can tee that into your foot pedals and into a sprayer arm. And if you're doing that, right, the sprayer arm functions either with your hand mixers or with your foot pedals. The issue is that most TNS brass shutoffs, like quarter turn shutoffs, this is what I used to have, right? What they do is they're designed to exclusively run a sprayer arm. And most of those situations are in dishwash pits. And in a dishwash pit, you're always using the sprayer arm, and you have to tell it, hey, I want to use the gooseneck. So, and that's the way I used to have it. But if you're okay with the look of that, then it's like very easy, because you could just buy a separate gooseneck that comes up. And it has the quarter turn shut off for the gooseneck. You leave that on all the time, so the gooseneck is default on, right? And so you can buy a deck mount faucet without the gooseneck. You buy the add on gooseneck, and then you have the T that comes out and down, and then you buy the flange there and hook it into your spray arm and your foot pedals, and you should be good to go. I actually got used to having kind of the weird industrial chrome-looking faucet thing, and I actually loved it and liked it better than my system. But it's just a matter of mix and matching with all the TNS brass stuff.
Okay. I think that's enough to help. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let us know how it works out.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
All right. So back to the stale bread. So it's not strictly moisture loss that's happening, right? It's actually the starch. But that's the thing, again, it's more complicated. When I went back to look into it, the research has changed. People have done additional research since the last time I looked at it. But in general, what you're looking at is the starches are recrystallizing to an extent, and the moisture is migrating from the starch sometimes to the proteins or into the matrix between where the starch used to be. And, for instance, reheating the bread can cause those things, cause them to reabsorb some moisture, decrystallize, and get good again. Once you do that, usually it turns to garbage quickly afterwards. But, yeah, so it's more than just moisture loss. And, by the way, the fact that it's a crystallization thing, if you think about it, this is why storing bread in the refrigerator makes you a complete enemy of quality, because you're increasing the crystallization rate by lowering the temperature of the bread. That's why when you're freezing bread, you want to freeze bread right away. Because when you freeze bread, it's the equivalent of – the act of freezing it alone is the equivalent of at least a day's worth of just sitting out on your counter, and you want to thaw it relatively rapidly. You want it to be in that evil fridge zone for as short a period of time as possible. All right. So before we get kicked off, we should handle some Halloween questions. I should have done this one first, and we get the folks in the chat room on with this, and maybe Nastasia has some idea, because Nastasia is the queen of the Halloween and Christmas.
You know what I'm going to say.
I exactly know what you're going to say, and that's why I want you to talk about it. This is from Matt. Hi, Cooking Issues crew. I'm looking to make some Halloween/spooky themed cocktails for Halloween. So two questions. I'm using fresh Concord grapes, but don't really have a way of juicing them and getting the seed out. Any thought on that without the aid of a juicer, or can I just blend it all and then clear it with some pectinase or whatever? Look, you can blend Concord grapes, but the seeds get bitter. So like, remember the time that we tried it and it was like, gross, all the seed particles and the thing was just nasty.
We used the Santa after that.
Yeah, but then like when I've done it without the Santa, like I've literally just mashed it like Lucille Ball making wine back in the I Love Lucy. You know what I mean? You mash the hell out of it, add your Pectinase Ultra SPL to the mash, and then just keep mashing it for a couple of hours, and eventually it will kind of liquefy, and then you press the stuff out in a sieve to get the juice out.
Stasi's, I don't remember that working very well.
Well, your yield is not as high as what we got, but it's it's hard.
Those were delicious cocktails we made.
Yeah, the other thing to do if you have kids or interns is get them to seed the damn grapes. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Then you can just blend the stuff. Those were delicious cocktails, but they were a pain. It was a pain. The Santa didn't crush the seeds, right? It's all a question of
yeah, but you lifted the – you jiggered it somehow.
Well, yes. But the issue with mashing, it's hard. You need a – Mashing is difficult because people want to try to your mash efficiency goes way down as soon as the depth you're mashing in goes deep, and as soon as the area that the stuff you're mashing can move to goes wide. So if you have a deep bucket and you put a masher in to try to mash something, then all of the whole Concord grapes just move out of the way of the masher as you push it through the stuff down the bottom.
Why did women call men mashers back in the day?
Masher!
Yeah, what does that mean?
I don't know. I mean, it means like, it's like CAD.
Do you know what I'm talking about? In those like cartoons?
I thought
stuff?
We were talking about Concord grapes.
I love that. You know, Nastasia? I appreciate that because that's an old school reference.
It's old
school.
Cartoons. And when I was a kid, I was like,
Masher. Do you know how many things are in cartoons that you have no idea what they are and the kids still find them funny? Mm-hmm. Like all the weird, like topical references that nobody. Mm-hmm. Like, do you remember when Yosemite Sam was, remember when Bugs Bunny was supposed to get this guy Fearless Freep to do the high diving act? And Yosemite Sam's like, I'll pay you my full biz to see the high diving act. I'm not going to see the high diving act. Remember that?
Well, that's a good impression.
Yeah. So like
he's actually making little pistol motions.
Yeah. You have to make the pistol motions. So anyway, but there's all sorts of weird topical references in that cartoon. That cartoon was hilarious growing up, but there's no like songs of the time, like Open the Door, Richard, you know that song?
Yeah.
Anyway, but it doesn't matter. That stuff's still funny as heck, even though you don't understand the references.
Looney Tunes are timeless, man.
Yeah, unlike Shakespeare, where someone has to sit there and tell you what all the references are to what's going on in the Shakespeare. You're like, oh, now I get it. That was like a current poem that people read.
It's because he would mash his genitals against females.
That is disgusting. Yeah. That is who would do that?
No, not
Trump.
Oh! Not a political show. Not a political show,
I mean,
Dave.
I think we're all on board with who we want, right?
Yeah, not a political show. Not a political show.
Well, we don't want people that want to.
Not a political show. All right. Mash your genitals. First of all,
No, not like, they're not out. It's just
still
mashing.
It's so pathetic. Imagine, like, you're like, is this good?
On a crowded train. On a crowded train.
Like
on the subway.
That just seems like a not, like, how is that? See, that kind of thing can't be an attempt at a successful attempt. You're not attempting to actually get someone to go out on a date with you with that kind of a move, huh?
Yeah.
Like, what are you getting?
No, I mean, but a lot of stuff, like, you know, catcalling and all that. It's not like you actually think the person's going to turn around and be like, hey, you know what? Let's go and get some dinner. Want to get a drink?
Yeah, but
like, hey, sweet cheeks. Like, well, hello there.
Yeah, I know. I don't really understand. I don't understand, like, so is it really just to show off to your buddies?
It's a power move. Yeah. Just like power.
But it's not a power move. Or
well, you
where
just
your
know
buddies
you can get
on
under
a crowded train.
Right, I don't know.
Well, no, that's just
a
power
perv
what,
move.
Perv move.
What, you can impose your own will on somebody else?
Yeah, or? I think so. I don't know. I can't even imagine, but it's,
Masher. That's disgusting. Was that an Urban Dictionary, or is that
I
a real...
Various sources.
Nastasia's favorite place to look up her data. Various sources. Again, back to Looney Tunes. You remember that when the king was trying to get, I think it was Yosemite Sam again, to cook Bugs Bunny, and he says, every day the same thing, variety. Remember that? The king wanted, and he wanted Haas and Pfeffer as opposed to variety. Totally meaningless. Do you remember this? Mm. And then Yosemite Sam was trying to cook Bugs Bunny, and you need
is
to
that
get
where Bugs Bunny's like sitting back like it's a hot tub?
Hot tub?
In the pan,
popping bubbly.
Like a hot tub.
Oh. Dude, did they not have Looney Tunes in Illinois?
No. There are episodes where Bugs Bunny is like sitting in a cauldron and like chewing on a carrot. Irreverently.
Yeah. No, that's not. Maybe it is that one actually. Maybe it is that one. But when you say like pop bubbles, I'm thinking of that like song.
No, I was doing a reference to Fat Joe.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I moved to Fat Joe from Looney Tunes. But,
oh, I see.
Yeah. But
and then what's that song? Pop Bottles, the other one, more recent one. Who sings that one?
I don't know.
Pop Bottles. I can't actually sing the lyrics of that. I can't think of any set of lyrics of that that's appropriate for me to sing.
All right, so we went from Concord Grapes to genital mashing to Looney Tunes to Fat Joe.
All right, well, let's finish this. Any thoughts for spooky Halloween cocktails? This is the same question, believe it or not, folks. The last word looks sort of like a witch's brew, but I'm not sure the best way to really make it pop. I could carbonate it, but I'd really want it popping up in your face to seem spooky. The other cocktail I'm thinking of making is something somebody made before: Concord grape, maple syrup, lemon juice, bourbon, Angostura, egg white shaken, real frothy, and then two drops of Peychaud's. Oh, not Peychaud's, man! Come on, just dump cough syrup in it if you're using Peychaud's. No offense, Peychaud's people, but offense. It's good in a sense.
I don't mean to interrupt, but I'm going to interrupt.
Yeah, yeah, that's my classic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, to show vampire teeth marks, all ideas appreciated. Thanks. I like the vampire in the egg foam. That's a good idea. I mean, Peychaud's, you know, I'm not for it, but you know, whatever. So, okay, if you're going to do a everyone's like, oh, this is for kids. Adults freaking love a hunk of dry ice in the
dry
punch.
Dry ice, as I was going to say, yeah, man.
Adults freaking love it. And then especially...
Dave, look at the pizza.
There's pizza with greens here. People here will... More reports on that next week. when we ask for a pizza with greens, they'll be like, we don't do that. We don't do that. Yeah. It's going to happen. I guarantee you. Nastasia, how much you want to... You won't bet me.
Because, and there's like prosciutto on top. It's like, I would love that pizza.
So listen, when you're doing... If you're going to do a punch with dry ice, make sure you don't put... Make sure you don't put dry ice in anyone's cup for any reason, shape, form, whatever. Activated charcoal, black, like the super powders that people use for health reasons, which I think is crazy, but whatever. But, you know, that goes in drinks. A lot of people have done that. And black drinks are creepy. And if you use enough of it, all your customers' or guests' teeth will become black, which is also really creepy for them.
Garnish with?
What if you had, like, cobwebs from, like, cotton candy or something?
And this – what?
Cotton candy for cobwebs.
It would melt, man. You could put some on top.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Don't put silly string in your cocktails. Here's another one. Nastasia has been, and Nastasia and I, don't say the name of the book. I don't want the price to go even higher. But Nastasia, turns out Nastasia is obsessed with this. Says she told me about it. I don't remember that. And then I mentioned it to her. Applehead dolls.
So, oh, yes.
As a garnish.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Applehead dolls. Yeah.
Applehead dolls.
So look up the old Vincent Price Applehead doll kit. So what you do is you take an apple, you peel all but the top and the bottom, leave that intact, then carve a face in it. Right? Soak it in lemon juice a little bit if you want. I don't know why it's going to go brown anyway, but they say to do that. Carve a face in it and then soak it in salt for, I don't know, like a salt water for like a day or so. And that's to, I think, I don't know why everyone does that. Some of that's probably just osmotic to pull the water out of the apple and also probably to help keep it from spurling as it dries down. And then dry that sucker down, like stick it on a chopstick or whatever or wire and dry it. Hang it or stick it up and dry it for a week. If you have a high dehydrator, you can do it quicker. If you buy the Vincent Price Applehead maker, literally is like a case that goes around a 60-watt light bulb and probably has caused more house fires than any other Vincent Price branded toy in history. Of course,
and what's the ultimate cocktail, Halloween cocktail?
The ultimate Halloween cocktail is to make a wine zombie.
Yes.
And Nastasia should post on her Instagram account wine zombie instructions.
It's true. So, Peter, what is your experience with the wine zombie?
I basically drank kamikazes straight out of the wine zombie, knowing it was kamikazes, and then
blacked out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
No.
So the way a wine zombie works is you go to your local Halloween shop and you buy a zombie mask, and then you build like a wire armature. You put a zombie costume over it with hands, and then you just put a punch bowl in there. You drill a hole in the bottom and jam a rubber tube in, and then you put it on like a circulator or whatever, a pump. Then you add all of your cocktail to that bucket. And then the tube out of the circulator or pump, whatever, goes into the mouth of the zombie mask that – I guess you put it over a mannequin head, right? A styrofoam head.
Yep.
And then dumps into the bowl. So it's just a zombie puking – and I think for this a red cocktail is appropriate.
Yeah.
Puking zombie blood cocktail punch into – and you can have like a hunk of dry ice in the punch bowl to keep it cold as it's circling. And so he's puking into a frothy – like steamy zombie thing, and the
and
zombie
then had, later you're puking into a
yeah. Now Nastasia, you know, believe it or not, even though she is sometimes a just get her done enemy of quality, it's good enough kind of a person.
That's what this was.
No, but yes. You went full on and you did a standing wine zombie.
I did a Santa
and zombie. right?
The zombie. Oh yeah,
yeah. And but if you're
well, the zombie
your first wine zombie out the gate, I recommend doing a bust only zombie that you can put on a tabletop, like a tabletop mounted zombie. But if you want to go full Nastasia and Piper, shout out to Piper Christian.
He said he gave up all IP on that. So
well, you still have to give him credit for working. You don't have to give him money, but you have to give him credit. Mm-hmm. So if you need plans, Nastasia should sell kit plans for wine zombies because. It's wine zombie year, and then the good thing is that with a very small amount of repurposing, you can do what Nastasia also did at the Del Posto party, which is the puking Santa, where Santa's puking up mulled, and that was a hot one. That's very good, like a hot, like a mulled, mulled wine. You did a mulled wine, right?
Yeah.
Like a glug, like a Santa puking up a glug, and Nastasia, again, took it one level further. Actually recorded her friend Phil Bravo like making Santa comments like too many cookies, whoa! And then like puking up the mulled wine, you know what I mean?
Or my
like,
best work with Dave.
Yeah.
Those are the days.
Oh, now you're making me think of the Archie Bunker song. That's such a good show. On the fan. Yeah.
Anyway. Gotta wrap it up, Dave.
All right. So listen, I have some questions I didn't get to. They are on zucchini pieces. I don't see who sent that in, but it's about zucchini residue and sticking. And again, much more complicated than I thought. You ever remember? I've said this on the air a bunch of times. When you skin pumpkins, you get that weird oozy latex that like causes that disgusting skin to form on top of your already disgusting skin. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so it turns out that there are these crazy exudates in cucurbits and zucchini. Cucumber, pumpkin, all cucurbits, and some have it more than others, these weird exudates. And so I'm going to look into that because I think that's an interesting subject. And I also have to get next week to replicating other cooks' dishes and when it's okay, when it's a rip. And we have a question on some high-tech equipment from Simone in Montreal we're going to get to next week. What do you want, Peter?
And go to chow.mofad.org and get your tickets to see Chow, the Making of Chinese American Cuisine, and then see Dave, me, maybe Stas. I don't know if she'll be there.
Because if you don't, give me the
give me the
moisture management, Peter, if we don't make it.
If you don't, then Mofad is just going to be in so much trouble.
No, we'd appreciate the support. So it starts at $30 and up. You can come and see the exhibition. So get out there, chow.mofed.org. Thanks.
Cooking issues.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.